two more weeks of classes.
Yeah.
Barely holding on. Okay. Today we're going over third declension nouns, and we're going to spend time going over the test. There's the outline. Oh, I don't have my clicker thing. So we're going to review the test. We'll go over what we did, what was it, 3 weeks ago now? With future, and we'll do a good solid review of that. We won't go over the what we normally do in the workbook, because I assume you probably didn't do it. And we got the test, and that covered a lot of that, so that is fine. And then we'll look at third declension. The third declension is where nouns stop being easy. It's kind of the catch-all declension, and there's a lot of little things to trip you up with the third declension, so hopefully it'll make sense, though. Let's review the test first, though. What do you think of it?
I thought parts of it I definitely overstudied just a little bit, but...
Overstudied? Or
Just a little bit. Only, like, the very beginning.
Okay.
And then... I probably should have prepared myself more for the translations.
Okay. Now, all the translations were straight out of the homework, so...
I probably could have, like, if I looked at it, I probably would have done that, but I kind of forgot those existed.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate goal, too. That's the ultimate goal for me, is that you'll be able to translate.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, depending on how... We're going to talk about that at the end of the day today, but... How far we go with this? At the very least, be able to tell why translator translated the way they did.
Yeah.
So.
I've already tried to start using it, like with studying the Bible and stuff. So.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, that's when you get to the point where your pastor's reading something in the New Testament and you can read along in the Greek. That's when you're like, oh, this is cool. All right. So the first section was definitions. Let me ask you this. I tried to go for tough but fair. Did I achieve that with the test? Or
yeah, I'd say so.
Okay.
I missed number three. I put case endings and conjugations in parentheses, but that is...
And actually, I would have taken that.
Okay.
Well, I was looking for the term inflection, but yeah, that saying what... You know what it's talking about. So that's. So yeah, the first diphthongs, connecting vowels, inflection, contract verbs. Did you get that one? Number four. Verbs whose lexical form appear to be in the middle, but have an active meaning, deponent verbs. I didn't finish writing in all of the answers, so we'll talk through them. The three positions, you remember those from the adjectives? All right. The three kinds of accents. Going way back in time.
But they're all there.
Okay. Yeah, I don't even know if I put... Yeah, I put those in the wrong order. You're right.
Oh, nice. Okay. Cool.
Words that indicate position or relation between two nouns. Did you get that one?
Prepositions,
right. The case ending indicating the subject of a sentence.
Nominative.
Case ending usually indicating the object of a sentence.
Accusative.
The ofness case.
Genitive.
And the to-ness case.
Dative.
Nice. You understand the concept of those, right?
Yeah.
Just what a genitive is, what a dative is. I didn't think you had a problem with that, but... the only mood we've yet learned.
Indicative?
The indicative mood. Can you name any of the other moods? Just from off the top of your head?
Imperfect? Or is that not a mood?
That's a tense.
Oh, right. It's present.
That's it.
No,
subjunctive can't. Is the other one. That,
oh, right, it's the weird one.
The most common one. Optative is one that you see almost never. So yeah. Well, but indicative is the something like 90% of the New Testament is written in the indicative mood, so that's why you can learn it. The voice that indicates the subject is doing the action of the verb.
Active.
And the voice that says the subject is receiving the action.
Middle passive.
Remember that you know the difference between middle and passive, right? Slight difference. So far, we haven't seen any forms. Or we have the future has a different form for both the middle and the passive. But the present and the imperfect, we went over, they've got the same in both the middle and the passive. So you use context to determine it at that point. But the future actually is spelled differently, so if it's a middle future, it'll be spelled a certain way, versus if it's a passive future, you'll know from that. But the concept of the middle,
yeah, makes sense.
The subject is receiving its own action, kind of. Okay. Paradigms. I have to do this from memory, because I don't know. I can do this. Logos, what's the gender singular?
Singular.
Lagu. Lagu? Good. Yeah. Data singular?
Lago with the iota subscript.
Lago, iota subscript. What's. Oh, capitalized. Alright, nominative plural, lagoi, lagon, lagueis, lagois, and lagus. Good. Alright, first declension, feminine, with the eta pattern. Graphe, and then?
Graphes.
Graphe with an eta subscript, and?
Graphane.
Genitive plural?
Graphon?
Nope.
It's with the... The W, that's what I put. I said it wrong.
And then accusative plural?
Graphos.
Graphos, good. And then the alpha pattern, similar.
Yes, yeah. It's just the same as the eta pattern. So.
But with?
An A, or an alpha.
And then the neuter. Say it again. Spell it for me.
Oh, man, I put that wrong. Okay, well, I put down ergo, but it's ergon. But
ergon.
I got that one wrong, so.
Okay. And dative singular?
Ergo. Oh, wait. Or go with the other subscript.
Ergo. You got all the rest given to you. So you got just ergon wrong on that one? So, okay. So how are you doing on points so far?
I've missed one.
1 point off, alright. Alright. Present active indicative. Rattle them off for me.
Oh, Luis, Louis, Luomen, Luet, and Luosin.
Yeah. I'm going to just adjust your pronunciation. Luo, Luis, Lue, Luomen, Luete, Luosin. It's kind of the, like, French, it's, you just, like, you only pronounce, like, a third of the vowels, right?
Or a third of the word.
Yeah. Greek, you pronounce every single vowel, every single letter. So, let's say.
No, in French, for the endings, you don't even pronounce like half of them. So, in speaking, there's no difference.
Oh man, that's gonna be a pain to learn.
It is when my teacher tries to speak to us in French for an entire class period because everybody just stares at her.
Just trying to force you into immersion.
Yeah.
All right, present, middle passive, indicative.
Lumumai, Louis, with the Euro subscript. It's that one's given to you.
Yeah.
And then, Luetai.
Luetai, yeah.
I did not remember that top one. Still don't.
Luamitha.
And then, Luontai?
Luamitha, Lueste, Luontai. Alright. Do you remember the Amy first?
Esten, Esmin, and then the other ones we got.
A, second person, the accent is important. I didn't put it on there. And now I'm blanking on what the right accent is. I think it's circumflex. Don't quote me on that. But pretty sure that's the correct accent on second person, because there's the other word A, which is spelled exactly the same in terms of letters, but it has a different accent on it. Okay. The A with an acute accent is the word if. So completely different word, completely different usage. So that is one time when the accents matter for the spelling.
Okay.
But I won't count off for it on this. All right, vocab. How'd you do on this?
I think I got over half.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Do you know the first one? Second one is love.
Okay, yeah. Let's go through and write in the ones you got, and then we'll go through and write in the ones you did.
And then the third one is in.
In, yeah.
Fourth one is to come.
To come. You're given the infinitives, and that's fine, but just FYI, if you were to translate that, what's the actual translation of that word?
We come, or?
Close. Make it singular instead of...
Oh, plural. I come.
I come, yeah. All these, your first person singular is the lexical form.
Okay.
So yeah, if you're talking with other people who learn in Greek, they're going to be learning the lexical forms as I come, I do this, I do that. But if you're putting the infinitive there, and that's how you learn every other language, so that's fine.
This is the part that took me the most time, because I would kick myself over the ones that I knew off the top of my head and couldn't get. Number six, I think that one's four.
Yep, four.
Seven to know.
Yeah. No.
Skip number eight. Number nine is sun.
Sun.
And then you can skip a bunch, kind of the 15.
What is it?
It's to love. So that one. Uh-oh.
Alright.
And then 18 is bad.
15 was I love, right? So I don't have numbers on here,
yes.
So.
Oh, okay. And then go down 3.
3. So to Paneros?
Yeah, that.
Okay.
And then 20, so down. I'm just gonna skip one. That one is to speak. And then we have man. Maybe.
It's we're actually gonna learn that next week, I think. It's he.
Okay.
Or him.
And then 22, two loops. I saw that one.
Two loops, yeah.
And then 23, together. Skip 24, and then 25 is to answer.
Answer, good. Alright, let's go fill in the blanks. Laleo is I speak. So notice it's means almost essentially the exact same thing as Lego.
Okay.
And they look fairly similar. They got lots of the same letters.
Like more than half the ones I missed, I've seen before all the time. But.
And you just can't come up with it. I know that feeling. Kairos is time. And there's a particular trend right now in Christian circles to pour a whole lot of extra meaning into the word Kairos and talk about how it's God's timing and can do like a Kairos, a moment in time. None of that is actually part of the word. It just means time. It means moment or this time, but you'll hear it's going on right now. It's just bugging me so much. People who don't know Greek and they're like, yeah, let's just use a Greek word and talk about how it means all this other stuff. And it doesn't mean any of that. Anyway, Uranos.
Yeah, I didn't know
that one. Think of your planets. That for some reason it means heaven or heavens, and Uranos is where we get the word Uranus, right? I think planets, okay, sky, heavens. And it also means sky sometimes, depending on the context. So.
Yeah, that one I just saw, and I was like, I don't know.
So that's where sounding out the word sometimes helps. Pistuo.
And that was one of those ones that.
Feel like you should know.
Yeah.
It's very theologically important. I'm trying to think if there's a clue that I can. But it's the one that you just gotta know. I believe, I trust in. Believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved. It's pistuese, you believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. Apa, that's a preposition. Means.
To, or.
Oh, close. Think the opposite of that. Away from. Hemera.
I thought it was sin at first, but that's hamartia.
Yeah, so. That's hamartia. Hemera is day. And that's another one that's just kind of bootstrap word. Oikos.
I thought of the Greek yogurt.
Yeah. Yeah, so, actually, I think the oikos, the Greek the symbol for the oikos Greek yogurt is helpful. Let me see. I spelled yogurt wrong. If I remember right. Yeah, okay. You see how it's got like this building thing?
Yeah.
A little roof? Oikos is house.
Okay.
So if you can think of the oikos. The roof that's behind the house or home. That's
okay. Well, that's a weird name for yogurt.
Yeah. It just sounds very Greek. And so they pick it. Maybe it's supposed to be like homemade yogurt. It's supposed to be that homey feel. Agathos. This is your example word when you learn adjectives.
Well, I know there was agape, which is love.
It's love.
So,
it's similar. It's I'm coming up short on being able to give you examples to clue you in a direction. It means good. So think of love as a good thing. Reminds you of that, I guess. Agathos Anthropos, the good man. That was the example. Entele?
That was one of those ones that I was kicking myself over, because.
This one, the way I remember it is it sounds like the word hint for me. And when I think of a hint, it's like pushing you towards something, right? That's what a hint does. And entele is command. So command is like, go that direction. That's the thought process of how I remember it. Kakos.
Yep, that was.
This is.
Was it evil?
Yeah.
You got wrong, but oh well.
Kakos and Paneros are synonyms, right? Evil, bad. Both of them could be translated evil. That's why I put them right next to each other. Should be up a little bit. Tritas. Deux, trois.
Four? Or three.
Three.
It's three in Greek.
Yeah. Yeah, in Greek it's hen or hais is one, and then duo, and then tritas. The third is actually what it is. But.
Okay.
And then thalassa. Actually, thalassa. Pronounced with the accent.
Could be a place. But.
Sort of a place. I think of the, I don't know why this room, this one was never hard for me to learn. This means sea or ocean. For some reason, that word just sounded like the ocean to me.
See, I thought of hot sauce, so.
Okay, that's gonna help. That might just be a bootstrap word for you.
It's long ago, hot sauce bottle. I don't know. I think I'll touch it.
So how many did you miss?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Twelve on the vocab.
So only seven, because I let you have five blank.
Yeah.
Alright.
And then I missed two in the... one in the verb and the other one in the nouns. So.
Okay, so one, so 2 points total from the paradigms section, and then 14 points total from the vocab.
Okay.
And then the translations.
I missed all of those.
You didn't do any of them. All right.
Yeah, I just ran out of time.
That's all right. Let's do. Let's translate this one together, and then I'll just write up the translation there for the others. All right, read that sentence for me. Blow it up a little bit more so you can see it.
Exousion. Eche.
Ha.
Ha.
Huias.
Tu. Han. Theropu. Han Theropu.
Anthropu, yeah.
Ha.
Smooth breathing mark, so. Ah.
C-E. This.
That's a. Let me change the font on that to help you out there. There you go. That was the fancy version of the fee. So.
A
fee and I. Hamartias, yeah. Exousion eche hachuias tu anthropu afianai hamartias.
So to forgive sins is in there.
To forgive sin, yeah.
And
yeah, that's near the end, alright. Hachuias tu anthropu, you know that phrase?
And he forgives our sins, something like that. That's son.
The son. To anthropu. It's one of Jesus' favorite names for himself.
The son of man.
Son of man. Alright. Let's put that under there. Right, because that's genitive, so of man. Hakuyas, the son. All right. Okay. That's a verb.
Came, maybe.
Sorry?
Came.
No, good guess. That's erchama. So you see the er in there. Eche comes from the verb echo, which means I have. So parse that verb for me.
Third person singular.
Third person singular. So he has for Eche. And an exousion, did you... So the Son of Man, he has exousion to forgive sins. What would you guess his context?
Come.
It's a good guess from context, but it's wrong. Authority, or right, or power. Authority is probably the best one. The way I remember exousion is, I think, exercise. And a guy who exercises a lot has a lot of authority when he's in the room. So, okay, so then we unscramble a little bit.
So, the Son of Man, he has the authority to forgive sins.
Right. And then in English, we'd just say has, because it matches. Son of Man has authority to forgive sins. We might add a the in there, even though exousion doesn't have the article, it's still implied. Alright, the other ones. Legusin gar kai hapoyusin. For they say and not do. Do not do. Nice little phrase there. For they say, gar legusin, and, or but, probably but would be better for this context, but they do not do. Ti de me kalete, kurie kurie, kai upoyete, halego. That seems off. I have to look that one up, but why me me legate you call? Right. Or kalete, I said legate. Kalete. You call. So why do you call me? Kuria kuria, Lord, Lord.
And
what's who? Remember up here?
Do or not.
Not, yeah. Who is negation. So, and not, poyete, same words up here, poyusin, poyete,
do.
Do. So, and not, you do, right? But, we'll unscramble it in a second.
And then, lego, speak.
Halego, yeah. What I speak, what I say. So, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and you don't do what I say? Okay. All right. And the last one. Backspace one. Uk akute. Akuete. Excuse me. Uk akuete. Hati ek tu theu uk este. Akuete, can you parse that for me?
I'd say That's second person plural.
Second person plural.
Passive. Is it the middle passive?
Nope, that'd be este. That's just
right.
Active.
Never mind. It's
But yeah. But yeah, present tense, active, second person plural. You remember what akuo means?
No.
I hear. So second person plural would be you all hear. Ook is another, just like ooh. It's the exact same thing, not so. You all don't hear that Hatsi. Ek tu theu uk este. You remember ek?
Well, I should. It's one of those prepositions.
Yeah. It's a common little word, and it can mean a lot of different little things depending on the context, but from is the most brute force way. So from the Lord, uk este. What's este? Parse este for me.
Este, that is... that one is second person plural. That one is... that one's for the... That one verb... The to be heard.
Right. Amy. So. Este would be second person plural of to be. So this is I am, you are, he is, we are,
y'all are.
Y'all are. So from the Lord, y'all are not ook. So. You all don't hear. Hatsi can mean a bunch of different things based on context. That, in order, because. From the Lord, y'all are not. So.
Because you are from the Lord.
Yeah, so you all don't hear because you aren't from the Lord. It'd be a good literal translation of that. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Alright. So, yeah. I'm in the exact same boat as you right now, where you are with Greek, I am with Hebrew. I'm just way behind in vocab. I can do the grammar just fine, but you don't know the vocab, you just can't translate. It's just,
yeah,
that's just the reality.
Well, I saw the translations and I was like, oh hey, I might try that. And then, I was like, well, it's only 10 points, and I should probably,
yeah,
do some of the other stuff.
Yeah, well, and I knew that you had vocab trouble, so I made that the biggest chunk of the test.
Yep, yeah, I saw that. I started adding up, like, before I started, like, I started to do this, and this.
Yeah, and you're so good at grammar, so I made that the least important part of the test.
That's fair.
Yeah. Got tests are there to help you, right? So. So you didn't quite make the 90, so you...
It's okay.
No money, but... Oh, man, the recording was stopped. Oh, well. I'll make a new one later. Alright. So, review of 3 weeks ago. We looked at the future. Oh, I have notes for you this week. They're just the PowerPoint because I was running behind. Where are you? Did I already give them to you?
I don't think so.
Future active indicative last week and the future middle indicative. And you remember the the big, scary, hard thing that you have to remember for futures?
It's spelled differently.
Yeah. The only...
You have to add the sigma.
Yeah. Add a sigma before the connecting vowel. Easy peasy. So, yeah. So, we're in... present tense would be luo, lues, lue. Future tense is luso, luces, luce. And this is where, when you start... If you say it out loud, that helps a lot. Because language is auditory. It's most of language is speaking. And so, the same way that when we're speaking, we throw an ed on the end of a word, and we don't have to think, oh yeah, that's a past tense. Just hearing the sound, walked, communicates to us past tense without thinking, oh yeah, walk plus an ed means past tense. So he's talking about something that he did already, not something that he's going to do. It just, the sound of having that on the end of the word just instantly communicates that idea to us. So the same with all of these formations, if you say it out loud enough to where it's just almost reactionary, you hear luso and you immediately think something different than when you hear luo. The just suddenly puts you into the future tense and mindset. That'll help you a lot. So yeah, luso, luces, luce, lusame, lucete, lususi. And then the middle looks exactly like the middle, except again, you add a sigma. Lusama, luce, lucetai, lusametha, luceste, lusantai. And we went over the imperfect. You remember there's two parts to the tense, right? Time and aspect, which is
like how something is done.
Yeah, kind of action. Aspect is in the imperfect. What's the aspect for the imperfect tense?
It's complete, or is it ongoing?
Ongoing. Yeah. Complete will be the perfect tense.
So. Yeah, that's fine. It's perfect.
Yeah, perfect, like complete, and then imperfect, not yet completed, ongoing, continuous. So yeah. So imperfect is past time, continuous action. Past time, continuous action. And then the formation, the thing that looks different is you add an augment, epsilon augment, at the front. So now we're starting to see prefixes. So, elu, you still got your stem, and then on. So then you have your imperfect endings. So, eluon, eluste, eluse, yeah. Eluon, elues, eluen, in future mode. Eluamen, eluete, eluon. And a note, on and on are the same, right? Which means, how do you tell if it's first person or if it's third person plural?
Context.
Yes. Context. Imperfect middle passive is the same as the present in that there's no distinction of form between the middle and the passive. But there is a new set of endings for the imperfect middle passive. So, you've got the augment just like the active voice does. And then it's eluamein, eluu, elueta, eluamitha, elueste, eluanta. Could you translate that word for me?
I speak, but it's not complete.
Well, it's still luo. This is still a luo word, right? So it's the word is loose, but so.
That's not good. I was thinking laying over some.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's I loose, but it's not complete. So it's not I loosed. It's I loose.
That'd be if it was.
No, it is. Although it's not.
So think through. Imperfect is past time, continuous action, or continuous aspect. So past time would be I loosed, right? But that's completed.
Yeah.
So how would you make it continuous in the past time?
I was loosing.
There you go. I was loosing. So yeah, that's how you, the imperfect think ing, past tense ing. So that would be I was loosing, you were loosing, he, she, it was loosing, we were loosing, y'all were loosing, they were loosing. Or destroying, or breaking, or untying, depending on the context. All right. And if we go back to active, what would be the... And I just completely told you wrong. I'm sorry. That what we just did was the active.
Okay.
I wasn't even thinking about voice. So yeah, scrap it. Everything I just said was about the active. I was losing, he was losing, she was losing. How would you make it middle passive? Receiving the action. Past time. Continuous action.
He was losing himself.
That'd be middle, yeah, good. How would you translate if it was passive, based on context?
He got loosed, or he was loose.
Okay, that's good, but that's more completed action, right? So how'd you make it continuous action?
Someone was loosing him.
Yeah, well, that would be if somebody else was the subject. So, he was being loosed. That'd be continue. That's, so it's going on, and he was receiving the action of the verb. So, like, imperfect passive indicative, the imperfect passive tense is just kind of hard to communicate in English perfectly. We have to add a whole bunch of extra words to get the idea across. But, yeah, he was being loosed would be third person singular passive imperfect of Luo. This is, so you can see as it starts to get a little bit complicated when you get all these different tenses. This is what makes Greek hard. That's the massive amounts of grammar. But you're doing pretty well with that so far. Alright. New material. We've got 10-ish minutes. Third declension. So, think back on, or back in noun mode. Alright. Logos, logu, logo. Okay. When we did that, we had a 2-1-2 pattern. If you remember, looking at the test, any of them, I've had the little 2-1 and 2 in the middle. Yeah, that was indicating declension. So think back, way back when we first started learning nouns, declension means a pattern of noun forms. So far, we've been working with the first and second declension nouns. First declension is that center one. Usually, first declensions are feminine, but not always. And second declension are the two outside ones that we've been looking at.
Neuter and masculine.
Yeah, neuter and masculine, usually. The reason that those fit in is because of how they get formed. The os on follow a similar pattern, right? And then the a, ace, ain follow a similar pattern. So the declension is just commonality of some pattern we see in how all of these nouns end in the same way in different cases. So we throw them all in the same declension to try and make sense of them. These are grammarian inventions that you can't go back to first century Greece and say, oh yeah, that's a third declension noun, right? And the Greek would be like, what are you talking about? This is just a noun. That's how we talk. You're not from around here, are you? Third declension nouns are the grab bag declension. They're all the nouns that exist in Greek that just don't really fit those patterns end up in the third declension, which means there's a little bit of variety. There's a lot of funky things that happen. We don't quite know how they got there always. They just sort of do. There is, however, a fairly consistent case ending for third declension nouns. So, it's the phrase sasia esoncias. That's how I remember it. The endings are s e a. So nominative, genitive, dative, accusative. Nominative, genitive, dative, accusative. we're about to see it in a chart, so it makes sense. But that's the phrase that I remember to give me my third declension endings is satia essentias. There's four hints. Let's actually look at the declensions first, and then we'll look at the hints to help remember. So this is what you already know, presented in a slightly different way. Okay. Lagos, lagu, lago. The actual ending without the connecting vowel is sigma. Genitive, the actual ending without the connecting vowel is upsilon. Yeah. Dative, the actual ending without the connecting vowel is actually iota, but because of the lengthening and the contraction that occurs, it ends up being omega with an iota subscript. But the actual ending is just iota. New for the last one. First declension nouns, there is no ending, technically. The connecting vowel lengthens and then becomes the ending, eta. The genitive is sigma, etc., etc. So that translates, right? That makes sense. This is information you already know presented in a slightly different way. This is the third declension, okay? The actual ending for masculine and feminine is sasia. And the neuter, almost the exact same, except the accusative and nominative just don't have anything. But the genitive and dative are the same, os and e. So this is where knowing the gender of a noun comes into play a lot, because they're not broken up by declension in the third declension. Like, you can have either masculine, feminine, or neuter third declension nouns. But previously, we've pretty much just seen feminine our first declension, masculine and neuter our second declension is what we've seen so far. Now we have this grab bag where the gender can fall in any of it.
It can be whatever.
Yeah. What did I put next? Oh yeah, so that was the singular. The plural, like, this is information you already know. The ending's actually iota, own, is, us, right? This is the third declension. So masculine and feminine, es, own, si, as, and a, own, si, a, are the masculine, feminine, and then neuter. So the thing you got to remember is the neuter, nominative and plural, nominative and accusative endings are just always a little bit different. But they're usually the same. They usually match. So, onomata and onomata, they're the same, so you use context to determine if it's...
Is the genitive and dative usually always the same?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, this is the strict rule. The thing is, the thing that makes a third declension noun a third declension noun is actually that the stem ends with a consonant, usually.
Okay.
That'll be usually what makes something a third declension noun. So for the stem for sarks, let me go back to singular. All right, the stem for sarks, that's the vocab word that you'll learn because it's nominative singular. But the stem is actually sark, ends with a kappa. But because of stuff that goes on in the third declension when letters come up against each other, something happens, they lengthen to x, so it's sarks. But you can see that the stem is actually preserved in the genitive, dative, and accusative. The kappa stays there.
So are these like all the ugly sounding words in Greek, pretty much?
Yeah.
The ones that don't flow quite as well.
Yeah, they'll usually be a little bit weird to say at first. Onomat is the other example. Ends with a tau. In the nominative, it just drops off. Tau doesn't like to stand at the end. So let's go back and look at those rules to help you. I'm going the wrong way. Rules that help you remember what's going on. Why do they do what they do? First of all, the nominative singular usually acts weird. The nominative singular, usually you'll have some kind of lengthening. Two letters will combine to form a new letter, like we saw in sarks. or a letter will drop off. So it'll throw you a little bit and say, I don't know what this is. So when you're memorizing your vocab, it's best to memorize both the nominative singular and the genitive singular, because the genitive will always be regular. It'll always follow the pattern, and there won't be as much funky stuff going on. Whatever happens in the nominative singular also happens in the dative plural, because the endings both begin with S. So, that's the nominative singular, sarks, and you have that weird thing. The dative plural ending is C. So the kappa sigma interaction, I just realized I spelled that incorrectly. So erase the kappa there. Right now. It's going to happen in the dative plural too. Turn it up 4 minutes. A new drops out when it's followed by sigma. So anytime a new gets an ending thrown up against it that starts with a sigma, the new will drop out, which throws you off a lot. Because you'll memorize a word and you'll remember, like, wait a second, there's an N somewhere in here. And it works a lot like what we think of it in English as the silent N, right? We just know to make it silent.
So I'm guessing if you see just a sigma for the nominative singular dative plural, there could be a new in there.
Yes. And then a tau drops out when it's followed by a sigma or ends a word. So those are your kind of rules that are operating that make the third declension do what it does.
Since this is like the thing that everything else goes into,
yeah.
Do all of the words follow the rules that are in here, or is this just like most?
It's the vast majority of them. You'll have a few funky words that you just gotta brute force remember.
Like English, it's like this is the rule, but actually only 20% of the words follow this rule.
It's more like 85-90% of the words follow these rules. The exceptions are much the minority as opposed to the majority. The other thing that'll help you is the square stops. So a stop in phonetics is when a sound gets interrupted, the flow of air gets interrupted by your lips or your tongue or your throat. That's just when you're speaking. Those are the three places, like teeth, lips, those are how you make sound. Right? So whenever the flow of air as you're speaking stops, like with a P, stops momentarily. So that's a stop. The square of stops is when labials, that's the term for, we'll talk about labials in a second, interact with a sigma and they change to reflect that interaction. That sentence will make sense in a second, so don't worry about it yet. Think of it, though, but think of the square of stops as natural contractions of consonants. So in English, we'd say KS. A natural contraction of that would be to put an X instead. Right? We could spell wax, W-A-K-S, but instead we spell it W-A-X. But phonetically, it makes the same sound. Right? Same thing with this. So... these are all stops. You got labials, those are things that lip letters, things that stop with the lips. Right? P, b, f, those are all lip sounds. Velars are throat letters. K, g, x, k, all the stuff that you stop back in the back of your throat. And then dentals are teeth letters, things that stop against your teeth. T, d, and th. When they come up with an S, so you put a labial with an S, it makes a ps. So anytime you see p, b, or f with an S next to it, they contract into ps. The velars, the throat letters, anything that x goes in, or ks, or ks, it's going to come out ks as a xi. Yeah, one more minute. And then dentals, anything that comes up to an S with a dental, any of the d or t or th, when it hits an S, the dental will drop out and it'll leave you just with an S. So an example of that, a third declension noun is scallop. That's the stem. when you throw a nominative singular ending against it, sigma, the ps contracts to ps, so scumps. Sark, we've already seen that, right? Sark-si, that's the dative, right? Sark-si, the kappa and the sigma contract to xi. Anamat plus c, the t drops out, so anamasi. So these are just kind of the funky things that go on with third declension nouns, and they're really tough at first, but as you're reading, you just kind of you get to where you recognize those all third declensions because they're not as frequent. So you'll recognize, oh yeah, that's the third declension. It's gonna look weird, and then you take a second and go, yeah, okay, dative, got it. And you move on.
The square stops helps. It makes logical sense.
Yeah, those are all the rules that are working together to form up what becomes third declension. We'll learn a few more things with third declension nouns next week, but this is, I figured, enough to get started with. So that's that. As far as continuing Greek, do you want to keep going next semester? Do you not want to? You're not going to hurt my feelings either way. But.
I don't know yet. I'll have to think about it.
Okay.
Because next semester is either going to be harder or it's going to be easier.
Okay.
So, we'll have to see. All
right. We get two more meetings in December, and then we'll figure out what you want to do then.
I should be able to tell you by next week.
All right.
I can ask some of my teachers what it looks like as far as next semester goes.
Cool.